Hey, 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 this is NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis. I'm excited to announce the launch of my new podcast, Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast. I'll be talking with friends, family members, old teammates, athletes, celebrities, moguls, and guess what? I'll be talking to you. Listen, this is all in the search for everyday greatness. So I'm asking you to come along with me on this ride. Download new episodes of Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast, every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on PodcastOne.com. It's not what you have. It's what's inside of you that actually inspires greatness.
All right. We talk a lot about apologies and how they work.
We do. It's very interesting. It's something I wanted to talk about, so I'm glad our caller asked us about it.
And I think we went some places that I found very interesting as well. First, we were unanimous on that we're both stunningly interesting. And that's one thing we agree on, right, Drew?
Well, that we generally agree on that.
All right. I also agree on Tommy John, and we agree on Tommy John. The secret, I should say, to staying sweat-free this summer, Tommy John, oh man, summer-ready, ultra-breathable underwear and bras, cool cotton underwear for men and for women. It's like having your body having its own little AC generator on there. I got to tell you, I wore my Tommy John's yesterday. I was working out. I worked up a froth, and I just dry it. It dries on me. It's crazy. It's so effective. You'll just never go back to what you're wearing. They have lounge pants and lazy day joggers and Zoom ready tees and polos as well. So comfortable, so breathable, so Tommy John. So upgrade. And once you upgrade, you're never going to look back. It's the best. It's Tommy John, right, Matt?
For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/ADS to get 20% off site wide. That's TommyJohn.com/ADS for 20% off site wide. TommyJohn.com/ADS. See site for details.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Church, get on. Dr. Drew. He's a certified welder over there. And Mexican specialist. All right, what's going on there, Drewski?
Addiction Mexican specialist. I like that.
Getting some glass clean. Yeah. I always find it interesting
that
they're the doers who don't undo in our society. Like, you know, it's like I'll walk down into my workout room. I mounted a big fan up on the wall. You know, keeps me cool. I'll flick it on. Nothing will happen. Uh-oh. And then I'll look down and I'll go, oh, someone unplugged it because they needed to plug in a vacuum cleaner. Or, the people come in and like, I got to plug my vacuum cleaner in. It's like, I'll unplug this clock or this lamp or this thing. And then here's an interesting point, Drew, and I'm very interested in this.
Okay. Those that undo.
I come across a lot people who leave the hose on because there's a hard sprayer nozzle on the end with a pistol grip and it's shut.
Yes.
But the hose they leave on.
Yes.
And so when you walk upon it that night or whatever, you see it spraying out and you just look at it and go, this is under
pressure. Just a little bit of pressure coming out the side of the
where it swings onto the hose bit, right? And I'm like, now my first thought is would they have left an open hose on, just a hose? And the answer is no. Nobody would do that. But because water was not pouring out of the end of the hose, now a spray was coming out because it's pressurized, but because water wasn't doing it and because
it's technically off. Off means the end of the hose isn't spraying water.
Right, but you turned it on.
Yep, typically.
Not typically, 100% of the time, yep. You turned it on, Drew. Thank you for softening yep. my landing of my fucking point. I'm trying to make. Typically, yes.
Well, typically
no,
was I wonder how many people think to themselves, well, I'm going to come back and do it again tomorrow. So I'll just.
No. Yeah. Who would think that? Mm-hmm. It's wasting water. Yes, it yes. happens a lot. Yes. And it's a kind of a concrete thinking, which mm-hmm. is nothing is coming out of the end of this hose.
Yes.
But do you not have the memory of turning it on?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I also see the, I shall unplug this thing. I shall plug in my vacuum cleaner or whatever it is. I will do what I need to do with my vacuum cleaner. And then once I'm done with my vacuum cleaner, I need to unplug my vacuum cleaner. But the cord of the thing that I unplugged is either hanging off the wall or on the floor right in front of the receptacle. And I undid it. Now, this plays to my theory, which people always hate it when I bring it up to them, or they go, you know, I say to them, hey, you took the lid off the mayonnaise, you just left it out or whatever. And they go, oh, I forgot to. I go, you forgot or you were done with the mayonnaise?
Right. Yes. My part is done here.
Do you do that at home? Do you ever at home undo things and leave them undone and walk away? You forget? And what is forget? What does that really mean? You know what I mean? Like, you just did it. Well, how did you
the
forget?
The first thing that has to be absent is lack of focus. Like, it no longer has a motivational priority attached to it.
Right. And then I always say, well, what if I said I'll give you $10,000 if you can make it a whole year without leaving the fucking lid off the whatever?
The motivation returns.
Mm-hmm. What you people need to understand is the successful people are motivated by... They're motivated by doing things properly, not by what's in it for me. And not this sort of concrete, I'm done with this hose or I'm done with this socket. I needed this socket at one time to plug in the vacuum cleaner. Now I don't need it anymore. Right. But there's still something you have to finish.
Now, let's dig a little deeper. By properly, do you mean well?
I've thought a lot about two modes. I've brought it up to you before. You shouldn't have two modes.
Mm.
You shouldn't have, I wipe my feet when I enter my home. I don't wipe my feet when I enter your home, which a lot of people
have
two modes.
So you have this compass, right? It's your compass we're talking about,
right?
Which is exquisitely tuned. It's like a fucking NASA gyroscope,
mm-hmm.
right? And I would say what I try to do, and you're just it's in you. You're there's no debate about it. It's always going to be that way. What I try to do to keep that kind of same priority in mind is to behave as though someone's always watching you and making
right.
judgment.
Well, that's
and
where that, religion that person used could to be, kick in.
Yeah, and that person could be you. By the way, you could be watching your own tape, but I don't care who's watching. Just somebody's. It's your awareness of
right.
of everything. And Kant thought that was the way you made a moral philosophy. Was you everything you did was a moral principle, and you operated as though everything you did, you know, operated from that principle. All the time.
Yeah. Well, simply have one mode and have it be the correct mode. That's all. I don't believe – and also, try to be a little more present when you're doing mundane activities.
Yeah,
I think that's the problem is,
no,
is
always,
everyone checks out
immediately. Always assume a camera's rolling. That's one way to sort of think of it.
Right.
Behave as though some people are watching, and also like a moral counsel is there looking and going, how's that behavior measure up? It could be your own moral counsel. It doesn't have to be an independent moral counsel. Hey, there's an interesting call up there on line 3. I actually wrote this topic down. So let's get to Kara. Kara.
Kara.
Don't call me Kara.
You had it right with your instincts.
Kara, don't call me Kara, goddammit.
Must we say goodbye?
Care's a better root word. But my question is, love you both, by the way.
Thank you.
I am reading your book, Your Emotional Support Animal, and I love it. And I particularly love the preface, not a preface, because I think that people apologize way too much, and it's annoying. But I wondered if Dr. Drew agreed with you.
Yeah.
And I also wondered how you feel about exceptions to that rule, Adam.
It's a great topic. I think it's a great topic.
Yeah, it's a good subject.
Yeah.
So the rule isn't never apologize. I apologize to my daughter probably a month ago because
you didn't acknowledge her feelings?
It was like it was a perfect storm. We did like a Friday show and everyone was at the house. It was, you know, quarantine time, and the show was with Dan Dunn, and so we were like tasting, you know, vodkas and tequilas and stuff like that. And of course, I was in my basement, so I wasn't like driving home from the studio. So it was on. I caught a little buzz, and then I like came upstairs, and it was time to eat dinner. And I was like eating dinner. It was a Friday, and I was trying to eat dinner, and she was just like kind of coming at me like the whole time, like sort of, where's your mask and how come? And I was like, what kind of man have a steak in his own home, you know? And she like, and I
this is a sitcom.
I don't know what I did. I just did a, hey, stifle yourself. I'm focusing here. Leave me alone. Like I just kind of raised my voice and told her to shut up.
This is your classic scram.
Beat it.
Beat it.
Yeah. Beat it. I startled her, whatever. Look, it's still all her fault. She started haranguing me while I was trying to fucking eat, but I realized it, like, it upset her.
Everybody told you had a blind spot around aggression?
Yeah, blind spot. I'm going to punch you next time you tell me I have a blind spot around aggression. Look, if you're chick or you, yes. If you're normal, I can express myself. So anyway, I apologize to her. All right. I felt like I owed her an apology. I don't like when I raise my voice and that kind of thing.
Did she accept it or did it lead to
anything? Yeah, she did. Yeah. I don't know what it led to. But the eating disorder. The point is this. There are times to apologize. It's happened. And then there are times not to apologize.
Well, the problem now is that there is this weird apology culture,
mm-hmm.
and it sort of feels like religious sanctification around sinning. Mm-hmm. Like, you have sinned. Mm-hmm. Recant. Recant. Mm-hmm. And you go, yeah, I guess I'm a sinner. Not enough. You're mm-hmm. not good enough, clean enough. That's the problem. It's one thing to go, yeah, there is an area I could adjust, and okay, I got that wrong. I'm going to adjust. I apologize. As opposed to what's going on now, which is you have to flagellate, right? You have to destroy yourself. You mm-hmm. have to. It's a little. It's gotten out of control recently, by the way.
Well,
like I would say, in the last couple of months.
Also, the people. I mean, let's really explore the apology. When somebody says, I've always said it, if someone calls you fat and you go, apologize to me, they still think you're fat. I mean, they didn't change their mind.
Right.
That came from looking at you and calling you fat. Now,
that's why I don't understand the apology culture, except to this, you're a sinner and I stand on high and judge you.
If you're literally having a publicist craft a response and then you're reading it into a microphone so you can save your job, then you're not apologizing. That's not an apology. That's basically, you know, it's like saying, you know, it's like Mother's Day. It's like if your mom or your wife, you know, said, where are my flowers? And you're like, you don't deserve flowers. I want flowers. Like, you don't deserve them. You're a witch. I'll never give you another blowjob. Okay, fuck it. Let's walk down to the florist and you pay. Like, fine, I'll do it. It's like, okay, so she ends up getting flowers. Does that feel like anything to her? Why is that satisfying to her? You know what I mean?
That's right. What I wonder.
No, it's not.
What are your thoughts?
One would like that.
Well, what are your thoughts? Do you have any ideas?
Well, I just think if it's like you said, if it's something that you genuinely regret doing, that's one thing, but especially celebrities and business owners anymore, they say something and you know when they're saying it isn't true. And I wonder who is even impressed by it. It seems they alienate more people with that.
They're not impressed by it. It's a basically drop and give me 20.
Mm-hmm. That's your sinner.
That's all it is. No, yeah. It's not your sinner. Well, it is your sinner. But what I'm saying is drop and give me 20. Now, what would it be like if a civilian could just walk up to Johnny Carson 40 years ago and go, "Hey, man, get down on your knees and do some push-ups."
Right.
And he went, "What? Get down on your fucking knees and do some push-ups."
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is.
Yes,
for me.
That's exactly what it is.
And you go, "That feels pretty good."
I'll tell you what I do. If he says no, I'm going to gather 1,000 of my friends. We're all going to come in and make you do push-ups.
Now, do you want him to do push-ups? Do you need the apologies or anything there? No, no. You just got to take a powerful person, a rich and powerful person, and force them to drop down and give you 20. And that feels pretty cool. I mean, how cool would it feel if you just walked up to George Clooney and went, "Hey, man, get down and do some push-ups for me." Well, guess who's in charge?
Yes, a control thing.
Guess who's a bigger celebrity than George Clooney? The person who says, "Drop and give me 20, and he drops and gives him 20. That's control.
Mm-hmm.
It's breathtaking.
It's breathtaking, but that's what's in it for them. It's not the apology. Don't get caught up in the apology. The apology's like, meh, what's the difference?
Where does it go? Is it, "Hey, that felt pretty good. How about 20 more?"
Well, it goes that where, no, it doesn't go that way, although it goes that way sort of. It goes, "Hey, that felt pretty good. Let's go find Howard Stern, see if we can get 20 push-ups out of him. Let's go find another person." And it's even, Clooney gave us 20 push-ups. I can't really ask him to do 20 more. I mean, we can try. Tell him that's not good enough, but he's out of breath. Let's go over here.
But they also tend to go, 20 push-ups. I wonder what else we'd get. What else can we do here?
Well, maybe it cut us a check.
I think that's where it goes. And there's two kind of apologizing, right? There is, "Hey, you're right. I'm a sinner. I'm a bad person." And there's also, "I made an error. It was incompetent. I will adjust. And I learned something." Right? Those are two different kinds of apologies. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. There is a mechanical apology that takes place on when you're dealing with building, construction, and things of that nature that takes place often. You know what I mean? Where you have to it's sort of like you're running into other trades and the electrician's coming in and going, "Hey, the drywaller went over all my boxes. I don't know where the boxes are. I can't rough it in because the drywaller." And then the drywaller's got to go, "Oh, sorry. I didn't know. I didn't see the boxes on there." I made a mistake.
Sorry.
That's a kind of mechanical, literally and figuratively sort of apology.
Yeah.
And then there's the take that back kind of apologies, which never made any sense to me.
Yeah, It's what is that? I don't know where to put one.
It's more in the "I'm in control" emotionally department.
Yeah, it's dominant.
I've always studied. I've studied that closely because I've always seen it in my parents and others who create. Thanks, Kara.
Thanks, Kara. Good job.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for getting my book, by the way.
Oh, I love it. I love all of your books.
What else stood out in the book for you?
Well, I actually just barely started it last night, and I was just so thrilled because especially the timing of right now, I've seen some apologies in the last week that just blew my mind because I just wonder who they're trying to impress. And like you say, they're just letting certain people control them, but it just seemed like the ones they were making happy are not even happy, and then everyone else just thinks they're spineless. So I was just really refreshed by that.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Once you make the proclamation that you don't apologize, they also kind of leave you alone.
If you don't apologize?
Yeah. Yes. You have to just go, "I don't apologize." Or I'll tell you what.
Well, you made that point about Trump, and it's so true. Nobody ever even considers that he might apologize about something.
No.
It's just not even on the table for debate.
That's right. That's why they say a million things about him, but they never ask him for an apology. Hey, thanks, Kara.
Thank you. It's fun talking to you.
You too.
I concur. All right. Let's see. So, yeah, more on that subject. It's an interesting subject.
Yeah, it is a great topic.
Thoughts, Drew, or do you want?
Well, I'm going to go back to apologies a little more because I feel like that could be unpacked and unpacked and unpacked. And what about on the other side? I mean, other than it feeling good, why do you think we're in this? I'm wondering. I always wonder if it's related to envy somehow.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, look. There's. And maybe, oh, Drew.
Uh-oh. Here we go. Uh-oh.
Existing sniff. The people that are wanting the apologies grew up in a video game culture.
Mm.
Now, the video game culture is a simulation of something.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't grow up in a video game culture. And when I see people racing cars or hunting Nazis or whatever, I go, but that's not real.
Right.
And they go, yeah, but it feels good. And I go, yeah, but you're not doing anything.
Right.
And they go, no, I am. I'm hunting Nazis. Like, well, it feels like something.
And in a weird way, it's an acknowledgement that I couldn't actually drive a racing car. I couldn't actually hunt Nazis,
right. But for this short period of time, I'm feeling satiated.
Yep.
I'm feeling good about myself.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So I didn't grow up in a simulator.
Yeah.
I grew up just sort of outside. And to me, I wanted to go race a race car because there was nothing to the simulation of it.
Right.
These guys have grown up around video games and looking at internet porn, you know, their entire life, and they're probably much less oriented to actually doing the behavior. Mm-hmm. So what is the apologies, a sort of simulation of power. You don't have money. You don't have a better car. Your apartment's still a piece of shit, and your girlfriend's still fat, but you have simulated power, and you're living in a kind of simulated world. To me, I don't care. I want a better car. I want a bigger bank account. I want a house with more air conditioning zones in it. You know what I mean? I don't want the simulation of that. That's not satisfying to me.
Sniff. It's good.
That's powerful.
It's good. Yeah, it's good. I like it. And, but it's envy in a simulated world. It's acting out of envy, which is destruction. I've got to destroy, destroy, destroy. But because we're not – it's interesting. I always wonder why this didn't result in real guillotines, you know, because it's the same fucking behavior.
Right.
It's the same phenomenon. I predicted it a long time ago that Revolutionary France was our psychologically the best model for what was going on psychologically in this country.
Right.
So here we are. We're there now. And it doesn't stop until everybody gets destroyed. Not the people that use the guillotines, bring the guillotines, raise the guillotines. Everybody's got to get fucking eaten up by it.
Yeah.
And we're not there yet.
No, but are you really destroyed by it, or is it a simulation of destruction? I mean, for some, they lose their livelihoods. Others just have to endure this.
Yeah,
this acid trip that lasts for 72 hours. This bad acid trip.
It's a great point.
It's not really happening to you.
You're right.
You
know? It's maybe why I keep wondering, how does this end? How does this end? I don't see where it ends. I don't see how it goes. So it's got to sort of burn itself out in some way.
Well,
or something else catches us, an asteroid hits or something. Who the fuck knows?
Well, what I was – we should be so lucky. What I was kind of – you know, always my kind of approach – to this is, once they're more, you know, when I was a kid, when I was young, there was a couple of celebrities, topless pictures, you know, kind of floating around. And it was kind of scandalous, you know.
Well, it impacted. Remember that politician, Gary Hart?
Right.
Ended his career.
Right.
Because he was on a boat with a young woman with a bikini.
Right.
Oop, end of career. Now, something. I don't know. Something like that.
Right. Once there are more celebrity starlets topless or in bootleg porns or whatever on the internet than there are that aren't, then it doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
It's sort of like, what happens if everyone has herpes? Well, then no one really has herpes.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Where the herpes, look. If you're at a party and they go, who here has herpes? I'm going to do that.
You over here.
No, and there's 25 people standing in a living room and one person raises their hand, then that's very difficult for that one person. But what if 12 people raise their hand? Well, you still wouldn't be amongst the people, but it would be much more palatable for those as they saw others.
Part of a group.
Now out of those 25 people, once 20 hands go up, then what is herpes?
It's just a baseline condition.
Well, once
it's a state of for all.
Once everyone is called a racist, then what's racism? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Who knows anymore? Everyone is a racist. So you can join everyone. You know what I'm saying?
I'm afraid it doesn't parse out like that for racism because there is this quasi-religious quality.
It didn't. It shall.
Oh.
It was not because we didn't have the racism wand out. We're going and you. We didn't anoint everyone, you know, like the Pope with the sprinkling of the water and the holy wafer. You know what I mean? We didn't have a super soaker of racism, you know. Now that everyone is – see, we used to use it a little less liberally. Mm. So now – you know, Megyn Kelly and Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon are racist. You know, well, then we'll just get Stephen Colbert on something and all three late night guys will be racist. You know, that'll be that. And but what you don't realize is it's getting to a saturation point where it doesn't mean. I've said you open your computer and Los Angeles Times, racist comments made by, you know, you'd be like, oh, what now? Right. That means we're there. When you're not,
when you can't make note of a headline.
Well, it's like when this whole NASCAR Bubba Wallace news thing came out, and everyone who heard it went, "Wait a minute, did he plant that?" And it's like, "Oh, well, this is the negative byproduct of too many calls of racism that never 5 years ago." That's good. There's a noose hanging in the guy's pits.
Oh, my
pit
God.
Line.
It would have been.
Ooh. Okay. Or paddock. Now it's like, Now it's like, wait a minute. Now, I don't think that it didn't happen per se. The point is you got America collectively to go, wait a minute, and now the damage is done.
That's the Jussie Smollett syndrome.
Right. This is the damage that does. And then there's been other cases of this as well, even, you know, going back to Duke lacrosse and some other, there's been other things, you know, the Army versus Navy, the guys were doing that sort of weird OK sign by their hips. That is a dog whistle to racist, whatever. You just do so much of that people go, Well, there was literally Gary.
Yes, sir.
You can find the story. I think it was a park in Oakland, and a black trainer had hung like a loop for some cross training thing where you hop up, and you hook your elbows under it, and you
lift your knees up, kind of.
Yeah,
thing,
bring. Yeah. I don't know, like a crunchy. You know, bring your knee up to your abdomen and blah blah blah. And people are like, "Is that a noose?" And the guy was like, "No, I'm a black guy, and I hung this stuff up to work out." And they're like, "You know what? We're going to investigate it anyway." And it's like, "All right, well now you're hurting the Bubba. Is it what Bubba Wallace?" Or Watson. Bubba.
The driver?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of... One's a golfer.
Wallace anyway, is the driver.
Bubba Wallace, you're now hurting his news case.
Right.
Because what is that story, Gary? It's fairly insane. Or maybe we'll save it. We'll save it for the next show.
Sure.
But this is why... So the guy who put it up is black and said, it's not a noose, it's where we work out. And the mayor of Oakland went... I'm going to go ahead and investigate it anyway.
Well, what you're saying, though, is that there is a hysteria.
Yes.
And that hysteria burns people out.
Right.
It also gratifies, though.
It gratifies like
That's why they keep going towards it.
It gratifies like, remember when I used to say to you, you'd go, oh, I had a guy who did 90 Vicodin a day. And I'd go, whoa.
Yeah.
Huh? He must have been in a fetal position. Oh, no, he was an attorney.
Yeah.
He went to work.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't take 90. Oh, you can if you start with one and gradually build your way up to it. You can tolerate it. Mm-hmm. And there's a tolerance. You just keep building it. But it doesn't have the effect that it did. Now it's just 90 to fucking start your day, you know, just to get through the day. It doesn't have the effect.
The hysteria is the 90 Vicodin.
It's what it got to.
Gets to, yeah.
It's what it gets
becomes
to.
Becomes 90 Vicodin a day.
Yes. That it loses because the one doesn't work anymore. Mm. The one used to go, I got a great high off this one, you know. Mm-hmm. After 2 weeks of that, it's like, gotta start adding. Doubling down.
I want to coin a new term called hysteria tolerance.
Right.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. I had a note. Let's see. And all right, Drew, you can talk sometimes.
No, I'm looking at a Kanibi CBD gummy, and I'm thinking my joints hurt. I wonder if I should take a gummy.
I'll take one too.
I was thinking about.
All right,
you're a heavyweight. I'm a lightweight. I'll see what happens.
Well, I'll take one and a half, and you eat the half. All right, live stand up and live podcast coming up July 3rd and 4th. Tempe Improv Friday, Saturday night. That's coming up, and then also. God, Kansas City's coming up.
Ooh. Oh,
that's December 18th. You got a little time. Royal Oak. Royal Oak is nice. It's outside of Detroit, Michigan. It's coming up on the 19th of December. Go to adamcarolla.com and please get my book and please leave a review on Amazon, if you will. Drew, what do you got?
Speaking of please stop by the streams I'm doing every day. I'm also going to I'm thinking about setting up a Patreon where I do sort of chats and Zooms every week. So if you have any ideas about what you'd like, send it to drdrew.com/contact. And I want to make myself more available for that kind of thing.
So till next time, I'm Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.